Hello, my name's Kate Rowles and I'm interviewing you for the Wellcome Trust as you're taking part in Anthony Gormley's artwork, One Another. The date today is the 3rd of October 2009 and the time is 4:15 p.m. If I can please ask you to say your name, your age and where you're from.
Hi, I'm Di Flatt, I'm 45 and I'm from Leeds.
How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. A little bit nervous of the wind and the fact I don't really like heights, but I'm here for my charity, so I'll overcome that.
Why did you apply to be part of One Another?
I'm sure lots of people applied just for their own personal self, but the only reason I applied was because it was an opportunity to say something about the good work of our charity and just do some promotion about our forthcoming fundraising events.
And when you found out that you had got a place on the plinth, how did you decide to do that?
What we're going to do today on the plinth? I got together with our communications team, Amy, who's come down with me today, and we discussed whether we were going to just talk about epilepsy, but that could end up being like a 1 hour lecture, and people won't listen to us for the whole hour. So we decided to make it a little bit more fun and do it all about our national tea break, which is in support of people with epilepsy, that takes place on the 23rd of October. And just encourage people to take part and therefore learn more about epilepsy through taking part in one of our fun events.
And what's the charity that you work for?
I work for Epilepsy Action, also known as the British Epilepsy Association. We've been around nearly 60 years. It's our 60th anniversary next year. We do a lot of campaigning for change in services and improvement in services for people with epilepsy, as well as provide a helpline service and information service ourselves.
And what's your role within this charity organisation?
I manage the fundraising department and do a lot of hands-on fundraising myself as well. I've been a fundraising director since 1997 in the charity sector, and I've been with Epilepsy Action since May last year.
And today you're going to be talking about the tea break. Can I ask you to explain a little bit about that?
Yes, National Tea Break. It's just a time where you can get together, have some fun whilst raising money for our charity. We encourage all our members of the charity and the fundraising and eventing supporters of the charity and anybody else that we can manage to talk to and encourage to get involved to hold a tea party with their friends and family, get their family to donate a small amount of money to come along to the tea party. Everybody has fun, drinks tea, eats cake, and raises money for the charity. But we don't just tell people go and do that. We actually provide them with a full organiser's guide and an organiser's pack. So they'll receive tea, they'll receive all the details of how to make the best of their party, their tea party. Everybody has fun, we get a little bit of publicity out of it and it raises money. And we've been doing it a few years now, and just this one event alone has raised nearly £100,000.
And today you're going to be talking about this event. Have you got a plan for the hour?
We decided that we shouldn't have a plan. We thought long and hard about, should I try and structure it? Should I say this about epilepsy or that about epilepsy or just talk about tea? And then we decided that I'm quite a good talker, so just see what comes out of my mouth on the day, because obviously I care about epilepsy. I care about the work of charities in general. I write a blog about charity fundraising that's not about my own charity, it's about fundraising in general, and I've generally got quite a lot to say about it, so we figured that let's just see what happens on the day.
And how did you come to work for this particular charity?
I'd been working in the charity sector in London from 1997 until, as I say, last May when I joined Epilepsy Action. My reason for going back to Leeds is that I am Leeds born, and I did have epilepsy myself as a child, which was trauma-induced epilepsy, and so I had epilepsy from being about 7 years old through to being 15, and never had a seizure since, but of course I'm very aware of how that affects you. I don't drive because I have bad eyesight in one eye. That affects my balance and I can't see both sides of the car at the same time. So again, I understand some of the issues people with epilepsy have, in that if you have a seizure, then you can't drive for a certain period of time. And so those kind of things have always been with me in my life. And the other side of it is it's a really great charity that do fantastic work. They've done some brilliant things and made huge changes for people with epilepsy over the last 60 years and continue to do so. And so I feel extremely proud to work for such an organisation.
What impact did having epilepsy for that period of time have on you as a person, do you think?
Well, obviously I was a child when it happened, and it's quite funny really, because I always was the geeky kid in class because of my national health glasses, the fact that I didn't see on one side, so I was constantly bumping into things and falling off pavements because I wouldn't see the edge of the pavement and stuff. So when I'd had this accident that then caused epilepsy, it was just like yet another thing that makes Di a little bit quirky. And I was very lucky. I had great, fantastic, supportive friends at school and teachers and my parents. And so it never really affected me that much, other than people had to be aware of the fact that I may not only suddenly seem to have fallen asleep, I might fall off my chair, I might have a full-on seizure. When you're at that age, you just take it in your stride, really. I do feel quite lucky I had it so young. I mean, you can get epilepsy at any time in your life. I think it is sometimes easier to deal with when you're a youngster.
Can I ask what the trauma was that induced your epilepsy?
You can. Well, of course, we've already established I don't see properly out of my left eye. I'd run out of the garden and was running down the grass verge down the street, and there was a big lorry parked up with great big steel things sticking out the side of the lorry, and basically I ran right into it, and quite a nasty head trauma. I was cut right through to the cheekbone, and apparently that's when I had the first seizure, was actually when that happened.
And now you've overcome that and you don't have epilepsy anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that you just stopped?
I was on the anti-epileptic drugs. I was on phenobarbitone for a number of years, and you know, regularly seeing my GP and having tests at the hospital. They were always fairly confident that I would grow out of it because it was trauma induced. And yeah, I haven't had a seizure since I was 15, but somehow it stays with you forever because you know how easy it came on. And sometimes, you know, if the light situation is a bit weird, or sometimes lots of very fast filming on TV when they're changing shots quite a lot, I can't cope with it because you always have that feeling that another seizure could one day come back. But in the main, you don't think about it.
And how are you feeling now about going on a plinth and talking about epilepsy and the charity that you now work for that supports this illness and people with it?
Well, I'm very proud to work for Epilepsy Action. So I'm proud to be going up there and speaking about it. On the other side, I'm really quite nervous because I don't like heights and it's very windy today. And yeah, that's a challenge I will overcome because I care about my charity.
Can I ask you to speak a bit about yourself now, and perhaps other aspects of your life?
Gosh, about myself. I'm one of four children. I've got a brother and two sisters. I've been married, but I'm now single and have been for quite some time. I do feel at the moment as if I'm quite dedicated to my work in the charity sector. I've been in the charity sector since 1997. I've worked for a number of charities in London and then, as I say, going to Epilepsy Action in Leeds. I'm quite active with the Institute of Fundraising and in sort of conferences and the training of fundraisers. I feel very, very passionate about the charity world and about the fundraising aspect of charity. Often it's very easy to give to charity and feel that you've done your bit because you've sent £5 or £100 or several million pounds somewhere. But when you're working in the sector and you see the massive impact that that person's pound or £1 million has made to change somebody's life, it's very, very humbling. And giving is relative to what that person has got. So one man's £1 is the same as another man's £5 million. And every single pound has an effect on somebody's life or somebody's country or on the environment, creating good change for the future. So every time somebody does something that is fundraising for a charity, they're actively changing something forever, and they're changing something for the better forever. So I feel very passionately about it.
And what did you do before you worked in the charity sector?
I've been quite lucky, actually. I've worked in most sectors, and I think that actually makes me a better fundraiser, because I haven't only worked in the charity sector. I've worked in the private sector for large corporate organisations. I've worked for a small private family-run firm. And I've been a civil servant. I worked for the NHS Executive, which is sort of the management arm of the Department of Health. So I've seen how everybody deals with their budgets differently and how they would work with charities differently. And I think that's really stood me in good stead since being in the charity sector, because I can talk to each of those constituencies in their own language. In the way that they expect to hear things, rather than just portraying it from my charity perspective. And I feel quite lucky for that, actually. However, since joining the charity sector in 1997, I can't ever imagine going back to any of those other areas of work now, because I'm very, very embedded in the charity sector.
What are your ambitions?
My ambitions? Gosh. Well, I love to write. However, I mostly write about charity and fundraising, because that's what I'm in at the moment. But I do also write poetry. I'm also an artist. I've done quite a few commissions. So my ambitions for the future, if I could do exactly what I would love to do, I would love to spend half my time painting and half my time doing my charity fundraising work. One day, maybe. We'll never know. But yeah, I can't see charity ever being outside of my life now. That will always be part of my life, but I would love to have a little cottage by the sea and an art studio or something. It would be fantastic, but that's a dream.
What inspires your painting?
Absolutely anything and everything. It could be a colour, it could be a flower, it could just be clouds in the sky. I do and can do sort of real painting of real objects or people, but what I like to do most is more abstract. So it may have a semblance of something, but it's more about me getting my hands in the paint. I don't often use paintbrushes. I quite often have my hands in the paint, and it's brilliant. I love to feel the paint and to express whatever creativity is coming out of me at the time through colour. So I'm quite a bright colours in acrylic sort of person.
What commissions have you done?
I've done a couple for... tends to have been people who've seen my art, so they will either know me or they'll have been somewhere where they've seen something of mine, so it'll be a friend of a friend of a friend sort of thing. So there's now a few of my paintings in various houses around London, and a few in Amsterdam from friends over there. And the one problem I have is quite often they'll commission me to do something, and then I go, oh no, I don't want you to pay me for it. Because it's kind of weird to expect them to pay for it, because I've enjoyed doing it so much. And also there's some paintings I've done and people will come to my apartment and go, oh, I love that, could I have it, can I buy it off you? And I can't let them go, because they're my babies, you know, they're my paintings, I did them. So I've now got stacks and stacks and stacks of paintings that I'm thinking, well, they're just sat there against a wall. I really should do something with them eventually. And maybe one day I will, when I'm ready to part with them. I don't know.
And your poetry? What's your poetry about?
Whatever I'm thinking about at the time. It's like with anything creative. I can't sit down and think, right, today I'm going to paint, or today I'm going to write something. it just happens to be suddenly one day it's like, oh, I've got to do that. So there has been times in the past where I've suddenly felt this creative urge come on, and I've had to book 2 or 3 days off work because I know all I want to do is paint, and I might then paint for 3 days solid. One time I was doing a huge piece directly onto a wall at a friend's house, and I took 3 days off work, and I don't think I got out of my pyjamas the whole 3 days. It was just me and the paint for 3 days solid until it was finished. And then I was happy with it, and it was a great feeling.
And how long have you been an artist?
Well, my dad was an amateur artist and brilliant at drawing things. So I've been drawing ever since I was a tiny, tiny little child. Before starting school, I was drawing and painting and stuff with my dad, so always, forever.
What kind of work did your dad do?
He would do a lot of nature stuff. He loved nature, so I learned everything about nature from my dad, as did my two sisters and my brother. He would take us walking around the woods and parks and point out everything to us, be it a little stream or a particular leaf on a tree or acorns. He used to point everything out to us, and we really began to see the world in much brighter eyes than we may otherwise have done. He made sure we didn't miss the beautiful things in life. And he loved nature, so a lot of his pictures and paintings would be of animals and birds and trees, and he would use oils or watercolour or pencil, whatever he had to hand at the time. And that came through to me too, so that's kind of what I do now as well.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Leeds. And as I say, first came down to London in 93 and then came back down my second time in 97, and now finally back in Leeds.
And how does that feel to be back in your hometown?
It feels great. I'm really enjoying it. Much more relaxed than I was in London. But at the same time, now when I come down to London, I still feel like I've also come back home when I come to London, because I miss London a lot as well. So I'm very much now a Leeds London girl.
What were your three words that you chose for your profile to describe yourself?
Can I remember? Passionate, caring, and I can't remember what the third one was. Might have been energy or something like that.
Could you elaborate on those a little bit?
Well, I'm generally passionate about everything I do. I'm sure that's coming across now. I'm passionate about my work, about my painting, about whatever photography. I like taking photographs as well. So when I decide I'm doing something, I am quite passionate about it. I'm a very caring person. Sometimes told that I'm, you know, too generous, too kind, and to get a bit harder, but why? You know, there's a lot of hard edges in the world, so I like to smooth the edges, and let's just have fun and care about each other. And energy, well, if energy is my third one, I think it might be. To do my job, you have to have lots of energy, otherwise you just couldn't keep going. As with everything in the world, the Pareto principle is very strong in the world of fundraising. It is 80% rejection and 20% acceptance when you're trying to raise income, when you make it, whether that's, you know, from shaking a tin at the man on the street through to writing 38-page applications to a government department for a grant. It's, you know, it's 80% rejection. So, you know, we have to be resilient, be tenacious, keep going, keep smiling, and that takes a hell of a lot of energy and passion.
What's important to you at the moment in your life? What's happening for you?
What's happening for me right now? I don't know. My work, my family, my friends, All of it's important to me. And things that are happening for me now are that as I'm getting older, I sort of more acceptance of the things that are really important to me. Not constantly looking for the next adventure as I was when I was younger, but more looking now at the things I really care about.
And who are you doing this for today?
I'm doing it for Epilepsy Action, and for everybody in the UK and across the world that lives with the condition of epilepsy. There's 456,000 people being treated for epilepsy in the UK today. That's a lot of people that need support.
And before you go and stand on the plinth today, is there anything else that you'd like to add or to mention? Any closing words, perhaps?
I just think thank you, Mr. Gormley, for giving everybody this opportunity to get up there. I know a lot of charities have been on the plinth and been able to talk about their work, and of course lots of individuals being able to express themselves. It's a unique piece of work, and thank you for coming up with it.
Thank you very much.